And today we are joined by David Kugler, Senior Vice President of Member Services and External Affairs for Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. David, good morning.
Good morning, Kyle. How are y'all today? Good to see you. Thanks for the invitation.
That's great.
Awesome. Well, David, we like to start every episode off for our listeners who do not know you, simply by asking, you know, if you could give us a little brief background into who you are and your role at REC.
Okay. As you said, my name is David Kugler, and I've been with REC for 10 years now. I'm celebrating my 10th anniversary, and it's been a wonderful organization to join. But I've spent my whole career, over 40 years now, I've worked in the electric utility industry in the state of Virginia. I worked for another utility for a long time, and then I came aboard with REC. I was a member of REC, and there was an opportunity to join the executive team back in 2011. And it's just been a thrill, and it's gone by so quickly. But I've done a lot of interesting things. We'll talk about some of those in just a moment. As far as my responsibilities, you know, it's kind of a long title. Kyle mentioned Member Services and External Affairs, so I'll hit a highlight there. Member Services, you know, we're a member-owned organization, a nonprofit, but so we call our customers members, and we have Member Services includes everything from a call center to billing and collections and things like that. Also, local community relations falls in that area. In my area is also communications and public relations, so traditional print media and all the digital formats that we have now from in social media and website and all that. That's a big job there. And we've gotten into video a lot, and things like we're doing right now is really important. And we have a specialist on staff in that area. And then the third area that we'll focus on more now is external affairs. So we are a regulated utility, even though we're a cooperative and a nonprofit, we're regulated by the State Utility Commission, the SCC. So oversee our efforts there. They regulate our rates and all of our operational responsibilities under the law as a public utility. And then legislative affairs or government affairs and keeping a good working relationship with all of our lawmakers at the state and federal level is part of my responsibility too.
David, I think you have a very unique perspective. It's something that we certainly see a lot here at the chamber, and that's that, you know, state and local government actually has a tremendous impact on local businesses and the regional economy. Can you talk a little bit about why it's important to engage with our legislators and elected officials, and what should other businesses kind of know? And if you want to, you can dive into a little bit but about the leadership that REC has taken in advocating for your all's members in the General Assembly.
Right. So just generically, the way we approach this, I mean, we are in the world of electric utilities, we're sort of a mid-sized company. We're not near as big as Dominion or Pepco or Appalachian Power, but in the electric co-op world, we're one of the largest in the country. So we have, you know, we have 170,000 businesses and homes that we serve in the Commonwealth, and we serve parts of 22 counties, so a big footprint, including Fredericksburg, all the way to, you know, almost down to Richmond and Charlottesville and up to Winchester. So it's a big area. And we have a lot of legislators. Their district overlaps our service area. I just checked the numbers because it's kind of impressive. There are 16 delegates that have part of their districts that fall in our service area, 10 state senators. And then we have five congressmen, four congressmen, and one congresswoman whose districts overlap. So we have, and then we have our two state, you know, U.S. senators also. So we try to keep in touch with all of these folks to get to know them when there's a new legislator elected. We want them to know us, and we want to know them. So we have an ongoing sort of dialogue during the year, not just during the General Assembly session. They like to know about our industry. They like to know about our business, what our issues are, and we try to keep them informed. We get to know their aides on a first name basis. So sometimes they'll get a call or a concern or a complaint from a constituent, and they'll need some information from us, and we're quick to respond to that. But even during the General Assembly session, you know, we want to make sure they're aware of issues that we're supporting or any that we have concern about and bring those to their attention. And that's just been a very, very, you know, productive kind of working relationship over time. They value that. They're not experts in energy, and they trust and respect our point of view. And if we say something is a concern or something that may need to be, you know, fine-tuned policy-wise in the law, they really they want to hear from REC, but all the co-ops work together on this through our statewide association to help move things forward. Kyle, I can give a couple of examples if that would be helpful now of things that have emerged over the last year that of how we've worked with our legislators at the Virginia, you know, and in Virginia, the House of Delegates and then the Senate. You know, during the pandemic last year, the General Assembly convened a special session. The governor called a special session, and we've been under a disconnect moratorium. All electric, gas, and water utilities in the state have been under a disconnect moratorium. So even though some of our member owners, customers couldn't pay, we couldn't disconnect as we typically would. So that was universal across the state. And a lot of customers of electric, gas, and water utilities got way behind on their utility bills. So when Congress passed the CARES Act back early in the pandemic, I guess it was last April, a certain amount of money came to Virginia that was undesignated. And our governor and our legislature said, we want to earmark a significant amount of that money to help those consumers who have gotten behind on the utility bills. So that was one of the big issues that the General Assembly wrestled with in their special session last fall. And they looked to all the utilities, but specifically they were looking to the co-ops because we're kind of unique, small, member-owned. Members getting behind on their bills created some real financial hardship for a lot of utilities. And ultimately, the way this worked out was, you know, back and forth, they needed information from us. We ended up with a solution that the General Assembly passed in November and the governor signed, earmarking $100 million to help utility consumers that had gotten behind between March and October. And then there was a process where we submitted certain data to the State Corporation Commission. They determined our allocated share. And our share turned out to be $4.8 million for about 26,000 of our member owners that had gotten behind.
Wow.
And we've been going through a pretty extensive process that was outlined by the state legislature with our input. They outlined a process for us to reach out to those affected member owners and to offer them this, you're eligible for this many dollars. You just have to claim it. And you have to attest to the fact that your household income has been disrupted by the pandemic in some way. And then you can claim your share of the dollars. So I'm happy to report that 90% of that money has been claimed by our members as of today. Mm-hmm. And we're about ready to apply this credit. So we saw some collaboration between the administration and our lawmakers and trying to do the right thing for consumers and households that have been affected. And the co-ops had a big piece of that. And then ultimately that's gotten down to, I think the last number I've got is just under 15,000 of our member owners are going to benefit from federal dollars that came through the state that actually came through their co-op with guidance from our lawmakers in Richmond. So that was a successful outcome, I think, that to help those really in need. And I'll give you another, an example that might be of interest to some of the small business owners that might be listening or watching. REC has long been an advocate of renewable energy and solar energy for our members that are interested in this. And a couple of years ago, we worked with some lawmakers who were interested in advancing this for agribusiness. Agribusiness, you know, being a rural co-op, we serve a lot of farms and businesses that derive their their income and their livelihood from agriculture. And there was a bill passed that we thought really worked well. It set up a system where those large farms or agricultural businesses that had big complexes could put solar and use that in various ways to serve one, you know, then we put it on a barn to serve the home and things like that. So it was a good model. And ultimately, when the law was passed, it benefited a lot of agribusinesses around the state and especially in REC's territory. But there was one segment that was left out in the final rules that were laid out. And this has to do with wineries and breweries and distilleries. And there are quite a few of those around now, more and more coming up. And those are thriving businesses. And I know they've been hurt somewhat by the pandemic, but those are growing businesses and have become a bigger part of the state's economy and a big part of agribusiness. And the rules left out those businesses. So this year, the co-ops were champions of just a change to the previous bill that would open that up now to those types of small businesses. And the last report I got was it's cleared by, if not unanimous, very wide margins in both houses, and it's on the way to the governor's desk. So again, here was just a need for a small business opportunity to sort of fine tune an existing law to open up the eligibility to other types of businesses, and some work there between the business community and our lawmakers ending up in a good result.
Awesome. I think you guys are also working on some legislation on electric vehicles, reducing the upfront costs of new and used ones.
Yes, this transportation electrification movement that we're seeing from the industry and everything, and from federal government, some guidance. But this year, the Virginia General Assembly is really diving into this. We're not actively engaged, but it has a huge interest for us. It looks as if the General Assembly is going to pass, and probably the governor signed legislation that will put us on a path to setting out clean car standards and some targets for electric vehicles in the state. And I think there's also going to be directives to do in more in-depth study and review of policies to enable transportation electrification. Our company, our co-op REC, has been a champion of this. We know some of our members are interested, and more are interested. And so we've had a very robust website for a few years that members can go to and check out the models available and compare those and look at the operating costs and all that. I've got two in our fleet. We've got two Chevy Bolts that we've had for a couple of years. And back when we could safely do community events, they were always like a magnet. People love to look and talk about the electric vehicles. We've just ordered an electric hybrid F-150 to add to our fleet that we hope to get some experience with in the field next year. So we're moving in that direction. We also at REC, moving away from the legislative front more over to the regulatory, we have a pending proposal in front of the State Corporation Commission to offer run a pilot or an experiment to test an incentive off-peak charging rate. So those members who would be willing to charge their car at nights or weekends or during a time of day, middle of the day when the cost is less, will get a credit on their bill or a rebate on their bill. So electric transportation has a huge opportunity for the electric grid to be used more efficiently, because now it could become your fuel source. You don't have to go to the corner gas station anymore. You're just plugging in your car in the garage and doing most of your charging at home, or there might be public charging stations. But it also, if not charged, managed charging is not done properly, it could be a huge burden and overburden, the electric grid. So we don't want that to happen either. So the right price signals, the right policies, this is an emerging area that I know I'm excited about, and our company really is in support of. And we know more and more of our members, as the mileage range for electric vehicles is growing, 300 miles on a charge or whatever, people who live in the rural areas, whether it's Spotsylvania County or Caroline or where I live in Hanover, all over, they can drive, make a daily commute to where they need to go and not have to worry about the distance in their electric vehicle. So we're anticipating a huge movement in this area in the next, 5 to 10 years.
Awesome.
Well, David, I think that we would all agree that we're very thankful that you guys are being leaders for your members down in the General Assembly and advocating for some of these things, particularly around electrical vehicles. And I know we have a couple members that are breweries and wineries, so I'm sure they're thankful for your work on agriculture generation expansion. So thank you guys so much for all that you do for our community.
Well, thank you. And thanks to the Chamber, and thanks for the invitation to be part of your program today.
Of course. Thanks for joining us.
Take care. Bye-bye.